This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars, News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to a late June 24th, a late June edition of Jaguars This Week. It's the twofer. Vic is on vacation this week and next, so you get Loggy and me for the next hour. Actually,
you're not missing much.
You get me for the next 7 minutes, then I go to television. Then you get Loggy and Sean Considine for about 15 minutes. I heard that. And then you have us for the last half hour. Lots to talk about today in news involving the Jaguars. Some of it interesting and then some of it just tragic. Obviously, I'm not going to assume anything. If you've just turned the radio on today, maybe you're just learning that Brad Meester's high school football coach, we're talking Parkersburg, Iowa,
folks, yeah, middle America,
was gunned down by a former Appling Parkersburg high school football player in their weight room today. I remember now. With kids around, 50 kids in there working out. We're talking about this program that a year ago was an uplifting story as the tornado destroyed their town.
An F5 tornado go through the town and wipe out half of the entire town was gone.
But those players and the NFL and the teams involved with all the NFL players who have come out of that program rallied together. And you probably remember those black hats with the red AP across the top, the NFL mm-hmm. logo, the different teams' shields. Aaron Campman is from there. Jared DeVries is from there. Obviously, Meester is there. And
Casey Wegman,
who's now with the Broncos. I mean, they really rallied and did some good. And then here, for the second straight summer, you know, within a couple of weeks of training camp, we have another tragedy from little Parkersburg, Iowa. Mm. And who would have ever thought? Meester talked earlier today. By the way, he's going to be on CBS's early show tomorrow morning. And we were told by Ryan Robinson of the Jaguars public relations team that quite frankly, the interview requests just keep coming and coming and coming. And Meester and the guys that we just mentioned, obviously, are going to be at the forefront of this one. I know my high school football coach is still a friend.
Oh, yeah.
And someone that's very important to me.
Oh, yeah.
If I had heard this, I would be. And Meester saw this 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Just saw him, too. Ed Thomas is his name.
Well, what's great, I mean, most of us, you know, we all grew up playing high school football. And, I mean, our high school coach, you know, I'm sure it was the same with you. Mine was Ed Scott.
Yeah.
You know, still talk to him to this day. And he was high school football coaches are father figure.
Absolutely.
For many. And especially in a small town the high school football coach is kind of looked upon as, you know, one of the, I guess you could say the people in that tiny society is elevated as far as their stature.
Would you say that?
Because life revolves in a small town around high school.
Would you say that your high school football coach had as great an impact on your life as any football coach you had?
Absolutely. Maybe more so. I mean, I would have to say, because those were, you know, in the formative years when you're starting to learn a trade, which becomes a trade.
Right.
It was just a hobby then. And certainly I think you learn more in those years than you do at any point in your life because all the work ethic and things of that nature are formed. I mean, Ed Scott to me was everything. You know, I remember as a kid, you know, because I had an older brother, so I was around the high school scene a little bit before some. And so because I had an older brother, I got to be around my brother and be around Coach Ed Scott. And, you know, I looked upon him as somebody with great envy. And one of these days, you know, I want to play for him. One of these days, I want to be like him.
Larger than life figure for
absolutely.
A young kid.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and you think of Ed Scott, and I think of Tony Severino. And I'm sure that every guy who is driving right now or listening to this program is thinking of the coach, high mm-hmm. school football coach. Could have been a high school soccer or basketball
Doesn't
coach.
Doesn't matter.
That dominant figure in those formative teenage years, the guy who kind of keeps you on track. Our condolences go out to the Meester family, obviously.
Well,
Brad is rooting on this.
Into the entire town and the family of Coach Ed Thomas. I mean,
absolutely.
What a tragedy. And for those that that don't get up early in the morning to watch Brad on the morning show on your station,
on
CBS
47,
if you go to Jaguars.com, the Jaguars PR guy Ryan Robinson wrote a fantastic article about how it impacted Brad Meester and talk a little bit about Ed Thomas. So great article.
And kudos, by the way, to Meester for addressing this head on and meeting that obligation. You know, because last year those players became spokespeople for the town. They became the face of Parkersburg, Iowa, and he stepped right back up to the plate. Nobody had to chase him down today. He said, hold on, I'll be there at 2 o'clock, and I'll stand and talk. And that had to be immensely difficult for
him. What's crazy is that, you know, you just don't expect it.
I'm from that neck of the woods. You do.
Yeah,
not.
And that part of the country, I mean, you know, I mean, how
little
crazy
town America
is that?
Turns out it's a former player, a 24-year-old former high school football player who played for Ed Thomas. And he walked into the weight room today. And think about this, folks. Now, he had a gun. He could have taken out some kids.
Oh, yeah.
This was not a Columbine-style slang. He went right after the coach. And I have not talked to Brad today, but Ryan was in here a couple minutes ago and said that Brad was telling him nobody can figure out why this guy would do it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about your guy, Ed Scott, who was the centerpiece of the town in the fall. Same thing with Ed Thomas. Nobody knows exactly how or why this guy chose. But the one
tragedy
thing we do know is that this guy, Mark Becker, 24 years old, a former student at Applington Parkersburg High, has had a couple of run-ins with the law in recent weeks. He is in custody now in Cedar Falls, which is in Butler County. Mm. Took a baseball bat to a home last Saturday and then led police on a high-speed chase, reportedly over 100 miles an hour. So maybe this was coming last
weekend. He's got issues.
Yeah, maybe it was coming last weekend.
And in other news, less tragic news, but certainly something that we're not surprised by.
Dennis Northcutt's agent is confirming this evening, the Pro Football Talk report, that the Jaguars have told Northcutt and his people that they can seek a trade. And
yeah,
you say that's not a surprise because the numbers don't work in his favor.
Well, I mean, his agent is Jerome Stanley. And in emails exchange, he said that the Jaguars have indicated they intend to trade him and are trying to do so. And from watching training camp, you know, the two guys that I would think would be locks would be obviously Torrey Holt and Thomas. Mike Walker. You know, I would think that those two are going to be the guys, and then after that, I think it's going to be very young.
I said Mike Thomas because Mike Thomas is essentially
highest to the draft pick,
and he's the replacement for Dennis Northcutt. It happens; he's also an Arizona Wildcat, but that smaller, shiftier slot receiver that they brought Dennis in here to be a couple years ago. Dennis is 31. Dennis has a high cap figure relative to those rookies, and
they like their rookies now.
Absolutely,
they really like their rookies, and I'm talking not just the draft picks, but also the returning wide receiver, Nate Hughes.
Right.
Nate Hughes looked very good in the OTAs, and the rookies all looked good. And I think the one who really stood out was what Torrey Holt calls JD, which is Jarrett Dillard, number 87. And it
hands so soft you don't even hear him catching the ball.
And he reminds me, and I'm not trying to pump him up too much because it's just way early in the game, but when he's the type of player that Keenan is, that he doesn't have great speed, he runs good routes, he's got a little shiftiness to him, and he's got the knack for finding the open hole. So, I mean, a similar type of receiver, but certainly he's got a long way
to
go before
he proves
that.
So what you're saying is that number 87 is the new 87.
Yeah.
Kind of how it works out.
Same type of player, but, you know, I don't want to say that he's going to be at that level because, you know, I mean, heck, we're not even – they haven't even had pads on yet.
You can have the conversation with Sean Considine, the Jaguars' veteran safety. The former Philadelphia Eagle will join you after this break. I'm headed to do television, folks, and this program rolls along on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, where this portion is brought to you by Best Buy. Remember, stop by the brand-new Best Buy in the St. John's Town Center, and now we are joined by, I guess you could say, new Jaguar, and that's safety Sean Considine, who the Jaguars signed in February in the free agent market. And good evening, Sean.
How are you doing, Jeff? Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. You know, I went through the free agent process, and this was your first experience with the free agent process. You know, you're a former fourth-round pick out of Iowa for the Philadelphia Eagles. What made you want to come to Jacksonville? Obviously, when you're in that market, you know, money is obviously a part of it, but sometimes it's got to be more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I had several options, and I kind of wanted to gauge who had the most interest to give me a legitimate shot to get back in the starting role. I had kind of lost that position up there at Philadelphia my last year. and did well on special teams. And so, you know, I had a lot of teams knocking at the door about, you know, contributing on special teams this year. But, you know, I kind of sat down with my agent and looked over a few teams and tried to figure out what their needs were. And then I wanted to specifically sit down with the head coach and the general manager and hear what they had to say. And when I came down here and talked to Gene Smith and Coach Del Rio, I was very impressed by what they said, the plan that they had laid out between those two. And, you know, I knew they were coming off a tough season, 5-11 last year, but everything I heard from, you know, the GM and the head coach, it looked like the leadership was in place. And, you know, they were talking about the things that I wanted to hear, you know, about getting the program back up and going. And, you know, I was more than willing to be a part of that, and that's kind of why I ended up deciding to come down here.
Now, you've got 17 starts in your career, and at this point, you know, OTAs are pretty much done. Do you anticipate winning that starting job and being in the lineup opening day?
Yeah, obviously that's my goal. I came here with that goal in mind, and I think, you know, the OTAs were good for me. I think you know, not only gave myself a shot during that starting job, I think right now the coaches feel like, you know, if I continue my progress that I showed in OTAs and keep on working and, you know, finish out strong here to the beginning of August, and then we start up a training camp, that, you know, I think I legitimately have the shot to lock that spot down. And I know there's going to be great competition. There was during OTAs, and I mean, that's what you need, you know, in order to, you know, go from 5-11 to, you know, get back on the winning track, because you need great competition on the team. And we definitely have that in the secondary this year and across the board throughout the rest of the team. So, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, a hard-fought battle during training camp. But, you know, I anticipate myself being that guy, hopefully.
Now, when you said that as part of the process of figuring out where to go, you wanted to sit down with the coach and the general manager, and you did that with Gene and Jack, and, you know, the team last year, and Fred Teller, I think, put it best. He said that, you know, the chemistry is just not right. What is your opinion on how the chemistry is this year as compared to the successful teams that you were on in Philadelphia?
I think the chemistry on this team right now is even better than what I ever saw up in Philadelphia. And we won a lot of ball games when I was up in Philadelphia, but there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes up there, you know, through the media. And there was problems with, you know, T.O. when he was there, and Donovan had some issues with the media. And, you know, so those problems come up even on winning teams. And, you know, I think it all comes down to who are the leaders on the team, and are they, you know, able to pull a team through tough situations. And I think we definitely have that down here with, you know, David Garrard, the quarterback. I think he's an unbelievable leader, and I think he's a good football player. And, you know, everything I saw from him in OTAs, I was very impressed by. And, And then we got a bunch of other leaders on defense, and Clint Ingram really impressed me on the defense side of the ball. And, you know, I look for him to have a big season this year. But, you know, when you have guys like that in the locker room to keep the chemistry good and to lead guys and show the young guys, you know, how things are going to be done around here, and how, you know, that we're going to put winning as first and foremost important thing that we're striving to do, I felt good about what I saw the last couple months.
Now, one of the common occurrences that I saw watching practices in the OTA, quite often after the practice was over, you were walking off the field with the defensive coordinator, Mel Tucker, who has gotten rave reviews around the league. Give people your thoughts on Mel Tucker.
I can tell right away, you know, I've only been around Mel for 2-3 months now, and, you know, I can tell he's going to be a guy that I'm going to enjoy playing for. He's, you know, he's not afraid to tell you exactly what he's thinking, but he has a kind of funny/comical way of going about getting his point across, and I think guys relate to it well. I know he's going to be good for old veteran players like a cornerback like Rasheen Mathis, and then, you know, he's also good for the young guys. He's not afraid to push people, but at the same time, he keeps it pretty fun in the meeting rooms and on the practice field, and I can tell guys are relating to him well.
Now, you've had a first-hand chance, to really look at some of these draft picks, and obviously looking at the big guys is not something that you do, and it's hard to get a gauge on them. But the young wide receivers, Jarrett Dillard, as well as Mike Thomas, and a few of the guys that, you know, kind of most people may not think of right off the bat, and that's Nate Hughes and Taquan Underwood. What are your thoughts on them and how they progressed in the OTAs?
I think we got a young group of wide receivers, but I saw plenty of talent on the field. You know, we got certain guys that have a great speed. We have other guys that can catch balls, you know, thrown high or low, or have great hands. And obviously, then we have a guy like Torrey Holt, who has unbelievable veteran leadership. You know, is a proven player in this league. And you know, I think the elements are there. It's just with a lot of young guys like that, we're going to need that leadership from Torrey to show these guys what it's like to get through an NFL season and be productive at the same time. And I see that happening, but these guys are really going to have to progress during training camp, and that's going to be up to them, you know, whether they're, you know, can come in and pick up the offense in a short amount of time and, you know, keep up with the physicality of the game. That's going to be a big change for them. And, you know, I think we have the guys here that are going to be able to do that, but, you know, that's what training camp's for, and hopefully, you know, coming out of training camp, we're going to feel really good about that group of wide receivers we got over there.
Well, along those lines with the young players, you guys are going to have some young players in the lineup. They're going to have to step in. They're going to have to contribute. And one of the guys that I guess was somewhat of a controversial pick just because of the trade, Derek Cox, third-round pick out of William & Mary, and he's obviously on your side of the ball and in that position group. He looks good to me. How does he look to you?
I think he's a talented player. You know, you can see right away why the Jaguars would decide to, you know, maybe trade a pick and try to get a guy like him, you know, where he fell in the draft. And, you know, he's got a lot of talent. He's got, you know, he's got decent size for a corner in this league. And, you know, obviously right now he's very inexperienced. And, you know, the step up from William & Mary to the NFL is going to be a big step for him. But he showed in OTAs that he can cover down in the slot. He can cover outside. He can do a lot of things, and he picked up the defense real fast, which I think is probably the most critical thing as a defensive player can do coming in as a rookie or an inexperienced player like he is. And, you know, with guys seeing that, like the safety seeing that he's, can be accountable, that kind of builds confidence throughout the team that this guy can come out here and help us right away. And, you know, I think he was showing that he could do that until he kind of tweaked his hammy a little bit the last week there, so we didn't get to see him, you know, finish it out. But I think he'll be ready to go come August.
Well, now with OTAs pretty much done with, or they are done with as far as on the field stuff that's organized, it's the players, you guys, and strength and conditioning coach Luke Richeson. He's a little different, isn't he, as far as the techniques that he applies than what you're accustomed with, and most football players have become accustomed with. Tell people what it's like and what's so different about it.
I think Luke's just a little bit different. You know, obviously his program is a little different than, you know, what you're going to see across the league in the NFL. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that Coach Richeson is bringing to this team right now is his attitude. I mean, if you don't show up ready to work every day and ready to get after it, he doesn't care if you're the star quarterback or you're the number 53 guy, you know, 53 third man on the roster, he's going to get after you. And I respect a guy like that. You know, he's not looking to make friends. He's not looking to do this. He's looking to make us better. And, you know, I personally feel that I've gotten better over the last 2 or 3 months since I've been here. I've gotten in great shape. I've lost some weight, and I feel like I'm moving better. And I think there would be a lot of guys that would tell you the same thing.
Now, what does he do different, though? I mean, because talking to people, there's a lot of one set to fail, because, you know, most people, you know, born and raised that have had experience with football, it's weight room stuff, it's a little bit of sprints, it's, you know, maybe a little bit of cardio work, but he does some, he's not really heavy on the weights, is he? And it's more one set to failure. Describe that to people.
Yeah, we're not really going in there and doing the traditional weightlifting that a lot of people have grown accustomed to. You know, we're not going in there and squatting heavy weight. We're not going in there and bench pressing, you know, as much as we can for 3 reps. We're actually using very lightweight and most of the time, and we're just doing it until you can't do it anymore, or you take a ball and you slam it against the wall as hard as you can and set your core. And we're doing all sorts of stuff that's, you know, very relevant to football, because, you know, to be at your top performance in football, you got to be able to do that when you're fatigued. And right now when we're in the weight room, we're fatigued, and he's still asking us to, you know, do the same things we're doing at the beginning of the workout. And I think what that does is train you to be able to take that onto the field. And in the fourth quarter, when you're tired and everything, you know, that's when we're going to be at our strongest.
Well, it's just one of the things that you got to kind of pay the price now to reap the benefits later.
Absolutely.
Well, Sean, thanks for spending some time with us this evening, and I'll see you soon with a fishing pole in your hand.
All right, Jeff. Take care.
Thanks, Sean. And we'll be back on Jaguars This Week, brought to you by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, rolls along here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Brian Sexton and Jeff Loggeman, we're here this week and next before Vic returns. A little vacation for him. Fans, get Jaguars news as it happens. Text alerts to 58154. That's alerts to 58154. You'll receive Jaguars news and information straight to your phone. Standard messaging charges, of course, apply, and you could quit at any time by texting STOP to that number 58154.
Hey, by the way, thanks once again to Sean Considine.
How was he?
He's excellent. Excellent interview.
Is he an Iowa guy? He's from Iowa, isn't he?
He's from Illinois.
Okay.
Grew up on a farm in Illinois,
right.
Went to Iowa.
Got it backwards.
Fourth round pick of the Eagles.
Eagles.
Byron, Illinois, yeah. Yeah, and I've got to know him a little bit. Kind of a crazy story. He's a hunter.
Yeah.
And he is also on Mossy Oaks pro staff. And when he signed here, I had heard of his name, knew that he was – a player, special teams guy with the Eagles. Well, the Mossy Oak pro staff manager calls me up. Hey, man, one of my guys is coming to Jacksonville, because this pro staff manager, Tim Anderson, is actually lives in Iowa and is a huge Iowa Hawkeyes fan. And I'm sure that had something to do with Sean being on their pro staff. And anyway,
right.
He's friends with Sean. And
any of those guys in our booth in Chicago last year?
That was him.
Gotcha.
In fact, you got to meet Tim Anderson
him.
In Chicago.
Absolutely, I do.
And so Tim called me up and said, hey, man, when he gets down there, take care of him, show him the ropes and all that stuff. So I've had a chance to talk with Sean more than I have some of the other guys. And I've had a chance to talk with just about all the veteran signees, Torrey Holt. In fact, I had a great conversation with him last week on the field. And I talked specifically with him about his knee. Interesting conversation. I said, how is your knee, Torrey? And he said, you know what? He said, it's manageable. He said, but there's no question. He said, at this point, he said, it will occasionally flare up. And he said, and it just needs a break. He said, but the most of the reason that it flares up now, he said, is because we haven't done anything of great magnitude since the season last year. But he said that his knee has become accustomed. Once it gets into the grind, it kind of gets used to it. And so
you're saying it's more manageable during the season than in the offseason?
I think so, just because, as Torrey had said, that it's one of those things you have to monitor.
Right.
And I went through the same thing. Clyde Simmons went through the same thing. I'm not sure if it's the same injury, but it's an issue where when it does flare up, you back off, give it a couple days or a day, and you're fine. But there's no reason to push it now.
I know that our listeners just heard the conversation with Constantine, but just share with me real quick his thoughts on Derek Cox, because we've talked about this kid, and his emergence as a starter could really bolster what they want to do with Brian Williams in safety.
Yeah, and you know what? The one thing that I've been watching that group real close, and not so much watch. I mean, obviously, I've been watching Derek Cox, and last week we didn't get to see him that much. He got some type of an injury.
Yeah,
and
he had a hamstring.
And so he didn't do all that much. But from what I have seen out of him, extremely talented guy. But when you see an extremely talented guy, you would expect maybe, okay, let's see what Brian Williams plays at during the OTAs. Never saw Brian Williams take one snap, not one snap as a safety throughout the OTAs. I saw Brian Williams take snaps at nickel.
Okay.
But I've not seen Brian take a snap at safety.
Tells you what? That they're not
Sean
planning?
Considine is the
He's
guy
the
right
guy.
Now. It's
okay.
Him and Reggie Nelson as they go into training camp. Now, do they not have him repping at safety because they feel very confident that he's a veteran guy and that when they do make the move, it's not a problem for Brian. He's a smart guy. He did it last year.
He played well last year.
And he played very well last year at safety. And he played well at corner with the exception of a few plays here and there. So I'm not sure if it's they're very happy with Sean or they're not wanting to put a rookie like Derek Cox out there for the Wolves right out of the gate.
All right. Don't you want to see Brian Williams at safety based on what you saw from him early on last year? Because I think we talked about him being a Pro Bowl caliber safety.
I think the problem with Brian Williams playing safety is that if he's a full-time safety, where's your depth?
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And so if
when
you
you're blessed enough to have a guy like Sean Constantine,
you
got to
have three corners. Right. I mean, basically, you have three starting corners in this league, especially when you're playing a division with the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And especially when you're in a division with the Houston Texans, who have three wide receivers that can spread the field, and they all run well.
Well, I just remember a couple of the Lagavision segments that we did on the Monday night show talking about Williams and you circling him. And I mean, look at what this guy is doing. And then,
excellent,
of course,
player.
Because the way that the season unfolded, he had to go out and play corner. And I guess I just have wanted to see what his season could have been like, ended like, if he had been able to stay at that one spot.
He's very, very talented. He's got size.
Yeah, no, he does.
He's got a knack for he's not afraid to tackle.
No, he's a bigger guy.
You know, he's definitely one of the guys that's going to, I don't want to say put his head in there, because that's kind of teaching bad form in today's football game. But I like him at safety. I like Brian at corner. But you also you play him at corner with the understanding is that you got to be able to have a safety over the top of him with certain wide receivers.
All right, so
that's just a given.
What does Sean Constantine do for Reggie Nelson?
I think he's going to give Reggie the Deion Grant that I think Reggie really missed last year. And that's somebody that can run the show, and Reggie doesn't have to worry about, oh, I've got to do this and I've got to do that.
Reggie just does
it allows what he did. Reggie to play.
Can he play like he did in Gainesville? Can they let him just be that center fielder?
Well, I don't think you can play that game in college. And very few people have been able to do it in the National Football League. The only player that I know of in the modern era that can do that is Ed Reed, because that's the style that Reggie played at Florida. They didn't give him a whole lot of responsibility. And I'm not saying they just said, you know, go back there and just play center field, but that, for the most part, that's what they did. But Ed Reed's the only one that can do it in the NFL. But Ed Reed did it kind of loosey-goosey, because Ed was smart enough to know when he could cheat.
Okay.
You know, and Ed was a cheater. You talk to any of the coaches, you talk to Jack Del Rio, you talk to Smitty, Mike Smith, the head coach in Atlanta, who had some time to spend around Ed Reed, and they all said that Ed Reed will do what he wants to do at times.
But he makes up with it with his athleticism.
Absolutely, and he knows when he can get away with it.
All right.
You know, so Reggie's got to learn a lot of that, and I think Mel Tucker's going to be fantastic for Reggie.
You see the athleticism. In fact, I don't know that I would say that Ed Reed is more athletic than Reggie Nelson, but I guess he combines more of the intellect of the game
with
the athleticism. Right.
When you watch Ed Reed on
film, it's rare understanding.
When you watch Ed Reed on film, he cheats because he knows.
That's rare.
And you haven't seen Reggie do that yet.
All right. Well, Reggie's still a young player, too. So 355-NFL-1-355-6351. Jaguars fans, be sure to log on to Jaguars.com to play AMC Theaters Movie Trivia Challenge. It's your chance to win free movie tickets and more. More to come on this program. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
10 minutes left in our program. You're welcome to join us at 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We've got plenty to talk about, though. And, you know, when Vic is here, you can never go anywhere with the Brett Favre conversation.
No,
he hates to talk about it. He goes back to 2004, if you remember, when we were up there for that game in December.
Two quarterbacks that Vic just doesn't really – well, he loves to talk about Manning, but he doesn't have an affinity for either one.
No, he does not. And 5 years ago, he was saying Brett Favre should hang it up, be done then.
And I was telling him no way.
All right, so what do you think about where he stands right now? There's a report out that the Vikings have started ordering purple jerseys with number 4 on it. Mm-hmm. I think it's clear the two sides are on a collision course, and the only factor now is when Brett is medically cleared after the surgery on his bicep tendon. What do you think?
I think if he wants to play, he should play. You know, if...
Can he still play?
Yeah.
Did you see him last year enough to...
I watched him early on, and I think any quarterback, I don't care who it is, that has to go through basically a change of systems is going to have an adjustment period.
And that was
I thought he did remarkably well early on. But then, man, at the end of the year, you know who you reminded me of throwing? Chad Pennington.
Really?
I mean, just the arm wasn't there.
To suggest that Brett Favre and Chad Pennington look alike is
there were times when he threw the ball. There's no question that it wasn't there. He didn't know where it was going.
Right.
But the one thing that Brett, I always felt, had to have was a strong coach that could say, hey, Brett, what the heck are you doing?
Right.
You know, because if he doesn't have that, he goes back to I'm going to throw it wherever I want
right.
to, Brett
I'm
Favre.
The golden boy.
It doesn't work.
You know, The one reason why this thing can drag on and it will work for him is because Brad Childress worked for Andy Reid, who was one of his first quarterbacks coaches in Green Bay. Runs almost the exact same system. In fact, the offensive coordinator, Daryl Bevel, is his former quarterbacks coach in Green Bay. So he knows the system. It's tailor-made for him.
Yeah, to me, if he wants to play, he should play. But the one thing that agitates me, and I think my feelings are shared among a lot of the former and current players, you just get tired of hearing about it.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and that's all controlled by him.
I won't lie to you, though. It's great for me.
I mean, it's great for media.
In the dead zone to have something on in the evening
for
on the news.
For, you know, CBS 47 Sports, for Sports
Center.
We
have fun with it.
For, you know, the online thing, all the rumors flying. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody's chasing the latest.
Okay. You saw the Vikings last year. You saw them here.
If they have a quarterback, watch out.
With that defense and that running game.
Watch out.
Well, no wonder they're pressing so hard for it. I mean, by the way, you're talking about a franchise that has some serious financial woes up there.
Yep.
They do not have naming rights to that stadium. They don't have luxury suites. They have some, but they're not up to par with, you know, what in this 15-year-old stadium here in Jacksonville they have. They don't have the club seats. They don't have the revenue streams. They're not getting a new stadium. And their owner, Ziggy Wilf, is a real estate baron.
Yeah, which
they got some cash
people
issues.
Know what that is.
Last year they had to borrow some money to pay off Jared Allen's $32 million in guarantee. They really need to win, which is why they're being so aggressive and consistent.
I don't think any team is one player away. But if there was going to be a team that is one player away, it's going to be a player that's a quarterback.
Right.
Because that's the player of greatest influence in any game with any team by far.
And they have decent wide receivers.
They have decent wide receivers, but they have the premier running back in the National Football League. They may have the premier defense in the league. So if you add a quarterback who can play at a high level, that team's going to be tough to beat. And they're not playing in a division that's particularly strong.
Yeah, Chicago wasn't anything great last year. Green Bay, you know, fell off.
But I do,
two years ago.
I do understand what a lot of people's opinions are when it comes to the Green Bay fans. You know, there are certain teams you just don't go out the pasture with.
Right.
You know, if Joe Theismann, Billy Kilmer, or one of the great Redskins,
had gone to Dallas.
I was a kid growing up and went to Dallas, the Redskin fans would want to just crucify him.
You know what stands out?
I can understand that.
Remember when we were there for the preseason game a couple of years ago? He was still there, and it was one of those hot summer nights, and Green Bay is unique.
That was when we were there with all the bugs.
Yeah, that was it. Yep, that was it.
Folks, we get there to Wisconsin.
Right. We stayed in Appleton.
And we get in Appleton, Wisconsin, and you step off the bus, and it's like, it's not killer bees, but it's killer bugs of some sort.
Black flies.
You couldn't even open your mouth without ingesting a bug.
But those hot summer.
I remember that because of that.
Those hot summer northern Midwestern nights. And it was a beautiful night for the game, and I remember Brett walking around. I mean, here you are in one of the cathedrals of pro football. He's the golden one now, won a Super Bowl. Everybody loves him in the community. You think you can see players around here? I mean, you touch him. They live next door to you there. It's a different world. I just think he's cutting his own cord. You know what I mean? I think he's putting himself in a really terribly difficult situation.
He will for the near and present future, but the legacy won't change. I mean, he still will be known as Brett Favre, a Green Bay Packer, 20 years from now.
Well, and when he is a fame inductee, which he is certain to be,
he's going
to
go in as a Green Bay Packer.
So that won't really be lost.
No. But he will definitely have some of the luster taken off of his legacy in Green Bay without question if he does play for the Minnesota Vikings. But can you blame a guy for wanting to go and make another $5, $6, $7, $8 million?
No. Oh, no. I don't blame him for that. And I think I think as long as you want to play, as long as you can play, if someone's willing to give you a job, you play. It's the Vikings. It's what you said. It's the Dallas Redskin thing. It's the Vikings thing. Let's talk business here for a second.
Okay.
Last year, the Jaguars had their holdout with Derek Harvey. How much do you suppose that will impact their strategy with Eugene Monroe?
Well, I think it's going to change a little bit this year in that last year you had the defensive ends that fell right before.
Vernon Golston at 6 to the New York Jets.
And Ed Ellis in New Orleans. And so I don't think you're going to have that big of an issue because if you look at the draft order, we've got the board still up from draft day. Andre Smith was taken at 6. but typically it works from the bottom up. And I think Andre Smith is going to be the only one that's going to be maybe somewhat of a contract issue because his agent purportedly is kind of hard to deal with.
All right, but I mean, you've seen it from both sides, both player and management. How would you approach it? You know, we've got another, 5-6 weeks before camp begins?
I think that for one, I think both sides are going to learn from the Derek Harvey situation of last year. I think Paul Vance has learned from that, as you should. I think that the agents will look at what happened last year, this new agent that Eugene Monroe has, and he'll say, hey, look, this team, when they say something, they're going to be serious about it. So I think that that's going to help.
Do the Jaguars, I'm not even sure the right way to ask this question, are they under more pressure to get this deal done because of the way that last season went
down? No, and the reason I say they're not under more pressure is because they have Trey Thomas.
All right.
And that's why you get guys like that. You know, you get a guy like that so you don't depend on an unsigned rookie. And Trey Thomas looked good in OTAs.
Right.
You know, I think he wasn't there for maybe 1 or 2 days, you know, had an excuse for personal reasons, which you would expect from a guy in his 13th year. But, you know, it was funny, walking off the field last week, I was talking to Trey Thomas. You remember we had him on the show?
Yeah.
And I said, so, hey, Trey, how did you like my question? And I was talking at Heyday, Reggie Hayward.
Yeah.
And I said, how'd you like my question on the radio show? And it just went over his head. And I said, you remember I asked you the question? I said, can you still play? And he said, oh, yeah, I remember that. And I said, the reason you asked that is because you want to find not so much the answer, but the tone.
Yeah.
And he got a kick out of me, laughed about it. You know, he kind of understands what it's about. But all you had to do was watch him in OTAs when you have a young group of defensive ends, Julius Williams, one of them, and then you got Derek Harvey and Quentin Grosen. These guys here now, they got a lot to prove. So in the OTAs, there's not supposed to be contact. Okay. It's not contact. But it's pretty spirited.
Yeah.
And Trey Thomas did not pull the I'm a veteran guy, you're going to get it in training camp, I'm not going to go full speed here in OTAs. Trey Thomas competed.
So Eugene Monroe and Trey Thomas is going to be a fun battle to watch.
No, oh, absolutely.
As far as you're concerned. And on the other side, Tony Pachos and Eben Britton.
Well, and I think obviously Eben is not.
Evan, I'm sorry.
It's Evan. I did ask him that
I'm
last
to work
week.
On that
I wanted
one.
To make sure of the proper pronunciation. He said it's Evan. I think he's going to need a little bit more time. But the best thing about them signing Evan, Tony Pachos is looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah. Never hurts to push a guy.
Never does.
Joe Fortunato produced this fine program this evening, and we are thrilled that you joined us. We will be back next week with a two-man show. Right here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Have a great week, folks.